From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. Literacy in the United States is at a critical level. In fact, one statistic shows that 43 million Americans between the ages of 16 to 65 can't read well enough to fill out a job application. So is the concept of reading out loud to our kids enough to get them ready for school? Writer, educator, and literacy advocate Maya Payne Smart doesn't believe it is. And she's challenging that idea in her new book. It's called Reading for Our Lives. And she's joining us now to talk more. Maya, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Maya, first, would you give us a little bit more about your background, in particular when it comes to literacy and what you've done in that realm?
My background is actually as a business reporter and education reporter. So it was with the birth of my daughter around 11 years ago that I got really interested in the road to reading and how that unfolds. Parents are often told to have a lot of books around the house and read to their child every night. But as I dug into it, I realized there is so much amazing research that points toward more that we can do to really set a great literacy trajectory for kids starting when they're babies.
So talk to us about this, because I have a 14-year-old and I have an almost 11-year-old. And with our oldest, I mean, you know, from the time he was a baby, we did that whole thing, right? Where you read to them every single night. And we did, I mean, we did that all the way through, I mean, kindergarten. He did fine going into kindergarten, but I would say that he wasn't necessarily, reading at the level he should have been going into kindergarten.
So I think that it's important for parents to have a more specific understanding of what reading aloud does and doesn't do for your child. So it's great reading practice for the adult that's reading, but the child that you're reading to isn't necessarily paying attention to the print on the page. So some of the phenomenal benefits of reading aloud are bolstering that relationship and sense of connection with the child. And it certainly builds vocabulary. Picture books tend to introduce words that we don't use in everyday life. So there are so many wonderful benefits of reading aloud to our kids, but there are other ways to provide pre-literacy and literacy support to kids outside of reading.
So what are some of those things that we should be doing? Because as you've written in your book, Reading for Our Lives, there is this whole concept, I think, that as parents, we've been told that, you know, it's kind of like that bath, book, bed routine, right?
Absolutely. And I don't want to knock that routine of reading to your child daily and tying it to bedtime as a phenomenal way to keep it in the schedule and on your mind. But I think it's also important for parents to have an understanding of what's going on with their child at different ages developmentally and how they might use books, yes, but also just conversation and pointing things out to kids to help build reading skills down the road. So I spend two chapters of the book focused on conversation and specifically turn-taking in conversation. One of the bits of advice I had gotten as a new mom was, you know, talk to your daughter all day long. If you're pushing her in the stroller, narrate about the trees and flowers that you're walking past and all of the, just talk about everything you're doing all day. But what the research says is it's not only how many words the adult is uttering, but it's also the words or babbles and coos that the child is giving in return. So there's something magical about that dialogue, that exchange, that duet that really builds brain connections that support language development, and literacy development hinges on language development.
You know, I find this fascinating because when I think of my youngest child, he was, he was reading by the time he went into kindergarten. We didn't read to him like we did to our oldest. But as I was listening to you right now, the thing that hit me was, he was more engaged in conversation from the time he was born, but I think it's because he had an older sibling. So there was so much more just language going on with it, you know, having that sibling. I wonder if that plays into it at all.
I think it does. Definitely. It doesn't have to be only the parent who's a party to those conversations and those dynamic back and forth exchanges. So it could be an older sibling or a grandparent or whoever's in their environment. But there are these cool technology created by the Lena Foundation that's kind of a talk pedometer. So it counts the words in a child's environment. And there have been a number of studies done using that technology that give us insight in just the power of that back and forth.
So I know you have some strategies, and I want to get into that in a moment, but I also want to talk about where we see these gaps in literacy, in particular when kids get into school, because I think we have to talk about the gaps in lower income in families of color. There is inequity in reading achievement in our country.
And there are a number of factors that contribute to those disparities. So one piece of the puzzle is just information. What do parents know about their power to nurture, teach, and advocate for reading in their homes and in the schools where their children attend? So I tried to address that with the book by telling parents, hey, you have this incredible power. You can build vocabulary. You can teach letter knowledge. You can do all of these things with mostly just the desire to do it in your voice. But beyond information, as a society, we have to recognize that some parents, even if they read this book or listen to the audiobook or get the information from some other source, are going to have some challenges implementing it because they're impoverished, because their jobs or their neighborhood and other factors are barriers to having the kind of nurturing exchanges that we're talking about, even having access mm-hmm. to books.
Let me reintroduce you if you're just joining us. We're talking with writer and educator, as well as literacy advocate, Maya Payne Smart. She's written a new book called Reading for Our Lives. And it's really challenging this whole concept of the best thing we can do for our children is read to them. And Maya, as you said, we can't discredit that. That is a wonderful way to connect with our kiddos. But you, in your book, offer strategies. You have key strategies. Can you quickly go through those? Because I know you have six of them that parents or caregivers can do in their home.
So I talk about conversation and talk about book reading, but I also talk about explicit teaching. And many parents had bad experiences in schools or just don't think of themselves as teachers, but every engagement with your child, every conversation is an opportunity to teach them something, and you can teach letter sounds or letter shapes easily in everyday life. And so my book walks through the different ages and stages from birth through 6 years old to give parents some ideas of what they might teach easily at home a little bit every day over time with their child to have this incredible long-term impact on their literacy and life trajectories. But I also talk about connecting budgeting and advocacy as levers for reading success. And by connecting, I mean parents intentionally building a network or community or village of support for their child as a reader. So that's going to your library and attending the story time and asking librarians for recommendations of books that might interest your child and all of those sorts of things. But it's also having conversations with your pediatrician to talk about child development and what children typically do at certain ages and stages and how some of those language and other milestones might connect to reading down the road. I talk about budgeting because the fact of the matter is that reading instruction in our schools has been less than optimal for years. And part of what allows some kids to become successful readers is that their parents are paying for tutoring. So I wanted to be straightforward about that. If they have the funds for tutoring and appropriate resources in their community, it might also be something they might advocate for within their schools or other settings. So advocacy is kind of that sixth thing. And I think of that as a parent, when you've done all that you know to do, you've asked everyone you know to ask, and you feel like there's something else that your child needs. Often those are things that other children need and should be more readily available, so you can use your voice to influence policy change that makes those things more accessible for everyone.
And I have to tell you, one thing that really stood out to me in your book and frankly shocked me is that research showing that we can see cognitive disparities in babies as young as 9 months. And even these, you know, vocabulary and language processing gaps in toddlers. So with that said, I mean, again, what strategies do you have then for parents or caregivers? And I'm also thinking of, you know, oh my gosh, as a new parent, right? It's just one more thing to worry about now.
Exactly. So one thing I like to tell people about disparities is that they're important for us to pay attention. They're markers of difference. What matters is our response to those numbers and those differences and the action we take to help get kids, each kid, to their individual best level of reading. So I think it's always about not the disparity, but how we respond to it, what we do as individuals, and then what we do systemically to address some of these things. So I think the numbers just highlight, wow, these things, there are differences happening really early. What can we tell parents? What can we show parents that helps them have more of these brain building conversations? And what can we do in the school years to provide better support, tutoring, remediation, intervention for kids who aren't at their grade level so that they don't advance through elementary school, middle, and high school still not reading at the level they need to?
So before I let you go, if there is a parent listening right now, what would be your one key bit of advice that they could implement today?
My one key piece of advice would be that conversational piece. So whether or not you have a book in hand, books are great for sparking discussion, but so is everything else you do in your daily life. So pay a lot of attention to and be very intentional about talking to your child more than you think you need to, and about recognizing that their coos, babbles, responses, whatever they're giving you back is an important part of that conversation. And that the more questions you can ask, the prompt responses from them, the more you're labeling and pointing to things in your environment, and the more you're keeping the conversation going, you really are doing a ton of valuable work that will contribute to reading down the road.
Well, I appreciate this conversation so much. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed chatting with you.
Absolutely. We've been talking with writer, educator, and literacy advocate Maya Payne Smart about her new book. It is called Reading for Our Lives.